going to insist that none of the members of this community, completely at all times, but community, he was the boss. Heather is a community extended to all the Jews in Pressburg. That's a veteran.
I remind you that in the Greek church, there are signs that commemorate and men telling the women they should not be wrong on the color.
Mm-hmm.
And see dresses.
Right. Doesn't have much effect. Right. Well, we'll get into more modern times in a few moments. What's amusing about this tshuva, of course, is that under most circumstances you would never expect a Chassam Sofer to rely on the Zohar for anything. I mean, he was a strict halachic constructionist. But here he was acting more in his role as defender of the faith and fighting the reform movement and fighting any possible slight change in any of the most minute custom, that he was reaching out for whatever straws he could find, and here he relied on the Zohar. This issue of dress was a very serious problem throughout Eastern Europe, not just in Southern Europe and Hungary and so on, but I mean, as we learned many years ago, there was a famous tshuva of the Maharik, which maintained that a Jew does not have to dress differently than a non-Jew.
In
Italy, right. None of the people around this table is dressed except for those wearing a kippah, which can be covered by a hat or something, but the general mode of dress is not different here between Jews and non-Jews. And the Maharik stated that as a principle, because the problem that was brought before him was whether a Jewish doctor could wear a uniform. The doctors apparently wore a certain kind of gown, which identified them as having received a MD or whatever the appropriate equivalent of it was then, and he permitted the use of that. And Rav Moshe and the Tshuva sort of seconded that and referred to this Tshuva of the Maharik. I believe it was number 80, and I went to the library to look for this particular Tshuva of the Maharik, and it wasn't there. And the reason was that I had looked in the Warsaw edition of the Maharik, which was published in 1880, but going back to the Lemberg edition, which was published about 120 or 130 years, printed 130 years later, the Tshuva was definitely there. So therefore, during that period in Warsaw, where there were fights between the Maskilim and the Hasidim as to what the appropriate mode of dress of a Jew is, and whether a Jew can be allowed to dress similarly to a non-Jew of that time, they felt that this Tshuva of the Maharik was so dangerous that they cut it out, and it just simply doesn't appear in the... Well, this fight was not only amongst the Jews. After all, this started with Peter the Great when he tried to have the Russians cut off their long beards and dress like the Western Europeans. This was a long cultural battle, which...
Among the Jews, how did their dress differ?
In what?
The men wore beards.
Men wore beards and kapata. You know what... No, we're talking in 1880 Warsaw, the Jewish costume of the Hasidim was similar to the Jewish costume of the Hasidim today.
What about the women's dress? Was there a special way women had to dress?
Well, they also dressed in a distinctive fashion. All I'm simply saying is that this tshuva of the Chacham Sofer has to be seen in the context of the cultural war as to whether the Jewish community should be dressed similarly to the non-Jewish community, and not solely within the issue of what type of dress consists of modest dress and non-modest dress.
And the kapata was worn by a guy in previous...
Of course, 100 years earlier. Right. It also might be worthwhile to just read a few pages from Professor Katz on the issue of... how the Kabbalah began to become widespread and have some influence on halachic thinking. So I'll read just a few pages from his book. We've read this before, but it's worth rereading. Hmm? Yes, you have that. Right. So I'm reading from page 60 in his article, Halacha and Kabbalah's Competing Disciplines. He writes, Zohar, the turning point. Kabbalah's demand for primacy over the halacha did not arise immediately with the appearance of the former upon the Jewish scene. In its early stages of development, in the Provençal Sefer HaBahir and in the writings of the Gerona Kabbalists, through and including Nachmanides, the Kabbalah entirely preserved its esoteric character. The question regarding its study was whether it was permitted at all, and for whom. In the homilies of Sefer HaBahir, the commandment of Torah study is included amongst those to which Kabbalistic meaning is attached. Although it was given that physical significance, providing assistance to the divine forces so they may carry out their activities, Torah study's content was not altered thereby, but retained its plain meaning. The study of the exoteric, nigla, to use a concept which crystallized only later. This situation continued without significant change until the critical turning point in the history of the Kabbalah, which came about with the publication in the late 13th century of the Zohar. In the triangle composed of halakha, philosophy, and Kabbalah, the narrative occurred a revolutionary shift. Rabbi Moses de Leon adapted to his own needs the criticism voiced by Maimonides against the scholar who limited himself to exoteric study only. His major composition, the Zohar, was nothing less than a new light cast on the foundations of the Jewish religion, including its biblical traditions and institutions, commandments, and daily practices. This Kabbalistic midrash, which covered most of the pericopes of the Pentateuch, by its very existence constituted a form of protest against the rationalistic exegesis of the Torah and was, in fact, understood and presented as such by its author. In the Zohar, as opposed to its immediate successors, the Rei HaMehemna and the Tikkuni Zohar, the opposition between esoteric and exoteric study is neither stressed nor even sensed. In the Zohar's narratives, which are presented as the actual background against which the homilies of its protagonists were delivered, Torah study plays an important role. Many of them open with the words, Rabbi so-and-so was studying Torah, without even the slightest hint that mystical study is intended. Similarly, all that is said in the Zohar in the praise of Torah study and in the disparagement of its neglect refers without doubt also to exoteric study. If the Zohar exaggerated in either direction, it was merely overemphasizing the Talmudic tradition, which elevated Torah study to the highest position on the scale of the commandments. It was seen not only as a key to observing the Torah's commandments, but also as a means of achieving direct contact with the divine sphere. The Zohar, in its characteristic manner, was able to portray the process of making the contact with one of the divine spherot and fortifying it through the act of Torah study. The distinction was evidently made between the study of scripture and the story of tradition with regard to the specific operation of the act on the spherot. No special Kabbalistic significance, however, was attributed to the study, to the esoteric study. Just skip a bit. Now we're skipping a couple of centuries to the 16th century. The palpable impact of the Kabbalah Tzfat on the course of Jewish history expressed itself, as is well accepted, in the bursting forth of the esoteric teachings from their previously enforced isolation. These teachings, which until then had been the domain of a privileged few, or at the most elite groups, now entered the public domain. This shift occurs as a consequence of the dissemination of abridged versions of books, halakhic decisions, as well as homiletic and moralizing treatises which had begun as a matter of course to absorb the principle of Kabbalistic teaching. Of course, it was also effective the invention of the printing press. This process, as is known, was of such considerable consequences that it changed the face of Jewish culture and brought about a shift in the religious consciousness of the great bulk of world Jewry. It goes without saying that this shift also affected the problem that occupies us here, the relationship between exoteric and esoteric study. How did the spread of Kabbalah affect the study of halakha? A comprehensive and thorough answer to this question would demand attention to developments in communities as far afield as the Ottoman Empire, Italy, as well as Central and Eastern Europe. We shall deal here only with the last, with the spread of the Kabbalah occurred during one of halakha's great spurts of creativity. One of the signs of this creative file flowering is the distinctive method of study employed in the large yeshivot of Central and Eastern Europe, such as those of Krakow, Lvov, Prague, and Vilna. This method had two dimensions. On the one hand, it was customary to extract exhaustively all possible meanings of the text under study, Talmud codes and their commentaries, and this type of study, carried out with precision, gave birth to the rich exegetical and codificatory literature of the 16th and 17th centuries. On the other hand, the heads of these academies and their students were drawn to the cultivation of the method of chilukim, which consisted of debate arising from questions and answers conceived on the basis of various formalized schemes. Generally, those engaged in the chilukim were themselves fully aware of the sophistic character of their novel interpretations. In the realm of theological thought, however, these same generations were lacking in originality. They relied exclusively on the ancestral tradition, Talmudic Haggadah, medieval philosophy, whose ideas were reformulated by preachers and homilists according with the needs of the hour and the task of the contemporaries. It was this cultural situation. Yes?
You look aggressive on both ones already.
No. It's the same thing. What he's talking about was that they developed this form of game playing with these various concepts in which all kinds of castles in the air were being built as intellectual exercises, and people involved in doing it were aware of the fact that these were intellectual exercises. Nevertheless, it was a form of...
He liked it in his pillow.
Yes, here, in his use. In his use.
I never heard that word a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
There's a feel that this one,
that
he never translated.
Right. Well, I think one can say that the current status in the yeshivot, which is built on the so-called Yisgadera, consists equally well of all of these building of castles in the air with very little in the way of solid foundation. The only difference is that probably the people that do it in the yeshivot today are unaware of the fact that they're building castles in the air, whereas the...
the pejorative word.
Yes, the pejorative.
Yeah, is all right.
I don't know.
Evidently, somebody used it. Didn't
right.
Nobody objected.
I see. Well, you didn't object.
I know. It bothered me.
At any event. At any event, it was in this cultural tradition which the Kabbalah spot encountered upon its arrival in the Ashkenazi communities, and its influence there can be gauged by its impact on a typical representative of the period, Rabbi Isaiah Horowitz, the Shalom. Rabbi Isaiah was educated in the yeshivot of the great scholars of Poland and was trained in their method of halakhic study. With regard to beliefs and opinions, he came under the influence of the Sfat Kabbalah and saw in it the only legitimate interpretation of Judaism. In his work, Shnei Luchot HaBrit, he seeks to lend Kabbalistic meaning to accepted religious practice, including many new ritual details that he added on his own for the sake of enrichment. Yet, in his newly introduced laws, or in those regarding which there were differences of opinion between the codifiers, or regional differences in practices, he generally devoted his attention first to clarifying the matter from the view of halakha without resorting to Kabbalistic notions. His attachment to Kabbalah did not sever his links with halakha, but did influence his style of study in the latter and the degree of his devotion to it. In his youth, Rabbi Isaiah was accustomed to producing novellas in the fashionable, philistic manner, to use your word, but when he matured, he became alienated from it and graphically expressed his regret at having done so. The method of Chilukim had been criticized by other scholars for various reasons, but Rabbi Isaiah was the only one to have seen it as a criminal offense worthy of confession. And this seems to be linked with his mystical conception of both parts of the Torah, esoteric and exoteric. In other words, one of the reasons why the Kabbalah gained ground even amongst the great halakhists was the fact that they were increasingly aware that the constructions that were taking place in the yeshiva world were being more and more divorced from reality and from actual halakhic decision making.
And the Zohar is closer to reality?
No, it's a different form. An alternative.
It's a
right. It's a different form of reality. So at any event, this was something certainly the Hasam Sofer would could not be called a devotee of the Kabbalah in any sense. And he certainly came a couple of generations after Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Remember, Rabbi Yaakov Emden was the first great rabbi to question the authority of the Zohar and its legitimacy and who actually wrote it and its authorship and so on. So he was very well aware of the fact that basing a halakhic decision on practices, so to speak, according to the Zohar was a questionable idea. Okay.
Although the Chasam Sofer is not only referring to the custom of his community in a certain sense, regardless of where that custom came from. And
yeah.
In some sense, he's turning Gal Ashkar's reasoning against it.
Right.
In our community.
Exactly. Not into what we're doing now. Okay. Now, I included three Shavuot of Rabbi Hildesheimer, or maybe four Shavuot of Rabbi Hildesheimer. In the question that you raised, if you look on page 23, he just gives a short answer. That is his response to to your question.
But he does give two or three long shuvot that I don't want to read, but you can read on your own, in which he justifies the wearing of a shaver. It's on my there are four of them, I think. On my page is 23 through 25A. There's some A's and B's in here when I sort of forgot something and had to stick it in. Extra I have already numbered.
And the women who do not wear
them. Yeah.
What's
which women are we talking about?
Jewish women.
Which Jewish women? When and where?
Well, when the controversy was about
whether women are gay. Well, the other Jewish women covered their hair with a tichel or a tichel and a hat. You know what the dress code is. Yeah, and that's more or less what it has the way in which many Jewish women dress.
They don't wear wigs.
No. Found the share of it. And also last time we saw that in Russia, as opposed to Hungary, by the middle of the 19th century, and already in Galicia, the married women were starting to go around with their hair uncovered altogether, to the extent that the Ach HaShulchan said that the law of not saying Kriyat Shema in the presence of a woman whose hair is uncovered doesn't apply today, since Be'al Seinu HaRabin, most women, including married women, keep their hair uncovered. I now want to read with you, on my page 27, the introduction to a long article collecting all the various sources which indicate the prohibition of a married woman going around with her hair uncovered, written by Rabbi Shlomo Karlbach. So I assume that this was the grandfather of our friend, the late lamented Rabbi Shlomo Karlbach. So, Ma'ayim Mekomot Le'isur Priyat Rosh Ve'isha V'dinei Peyanach Ruvim. Oh, well, maybe before we do that, we should read a previous page, which is an interesting tshuva. That is, the part that interests us is the second paragraph, but the first paragraph is also interesting. So this is a tshuva of an Arsham. Okay? The tshuva... No, Arsham is with Shlomo Mordechai Shwadron. He's one of the great heroes of this shiur. I always love to quote him because he was one of the great postmen in Galicia, where my family is from. Hmm? Yes, Howard Squadron is a grandson, a great grandson. But yeah, he Americanized the name.
Where is he from?
He was from Brezhin, which is in Galicia, outside of the main, one of the main cities there, which one, Lvov, outside, not far from Lvov. But he was the great posik of Galician Jews at the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century. Yeah, he's certainly a posik that I rely on enormously. לתשובת מכתבו הנוכחי להקב תורך התקע שלן עם הישיב בצד מכתבו. So he just scribbled his answer on the side of the question, but fortunately the editor, תוכן השאלה, תגיד, שאישה אחת לקחה כל אשר לבעלה, ממון וחפצים ובכל אמריקה. ושלחו לה הזמנה על ידי היבט לשם איזה פעמים וימדה במיודע ערך שתי שנים. So this is the opposite of the usual story. The usual story, like in the movie Hester Street and others, is that the man absconds to America and then abandons his wife and will find another one. But here is the reverse. Okay. So, but here, unfortunately, there's an asymmetry in the situation, because if the poor woman is left behind and you're unable to obtain a divorce, then she is an aguna. She's stuck, like many of the poor Jewish women today who are left behind. But if the man is left behind, you have the option of the heter meir rabbanim. Under sufficiently severe circumstances, 100 rabbis can allow him to remarry and or deposit a divorce with a beis din, etc. Hinei maskim imo lahatir la'bal lisa acheret al yedei meir rabbanim mishlosha arotzot. ולעניית דעתי אין צורך להשליש כתובה ולא גט, כמו שכתב בשונו היחזקאל, כי אין זה בתשובת מהר"ן בשם אמר לו. ובמינוח וחי גב משמורדת, אין צורך להשליש כתובה, וכן בתשובת נודי ביהודה, קרוב וסופו כתב חי גבנה, וגם בתשובה סבבי יפידייגה. אבל גם גט אין צורך להשליש, כמו שבימורך שם נמצא בטענו שהוא לא יועיל כלל, ואין לנו צריכים לחוש לתקנת הפרשים והמורדת ותקופת שלך כל ממוני, אולי יוכל להוציא מידע את האושך אם תרצה להתגרש. Or if, after all of this, if she may want to get a divorce, maybe that he can use this as a lever to get some of his money back. Okay. ובדבר הפרצה של הנשים היוצאים, white יוצאים, I don't know, קרובי ראש, יפנה רומה לתו גם לגאונים. On the matter of women now going around their head, you should go to turn to the other great scholars of our day, שבדורנו, אז עשה קורא, אולי יתגלגל על זה זכות על ידי רומה לתו. If enough rabbis agree, publish a circular demanding that women cover their hairs, I will go along with it. ולא אכחד, I won't deny the fact, כי זה איזו שנים, this is for many years, שאיני רוצה לומר תחת החופה שבע בוח. גם אם יצירו, even if they insist, I refuse to make any of the שבע בוח. ורק ברכת אירוסין שהכרחי אינני סומך על דברי הבית יוצא, only the ברכה of the אירוסין, the first two brachos, am I willing to make, because it's necessary to make those brachot. The rabbi has to do that, he's the Masadeh Kedushin. And therefore, I rely on the Beit Yosef to v'skirat einai yimutar, that if I keep my eyes closed while making the bracha and don't see the women, married women with their hair uncovered, I'm willing to do it. Aval v'sheva brachot she'eino hechrachi, lomar be'atzmi, since I don't have the obligation to say the sheva brachot, ani choshesh v'dad rov ha'achronim ha'chokim ala Beit Yosef v'zeh. ולא מהני עצימת עניים נגד צהר וישאר, ועד יחדו לאחר לא מהזמה זין ברכות. ובעורותינו הרבין הפרצה רבה והולכת, והשם נסבח ירח. So, we have evidence from the Aruch HaShulchan that in Russia, the women did not cover their hair, and now we have evidence from the Marsham that in Galicia as well, the married women did not. Excuse me? Yeah, I don't know that. You know that?
Yeah.
Huh? You are descendants of. When did he live?
I have his faith.
You don't know where he lived.
Okay. I have the
biographies. Okay. Now let us turn to. Now let us turn to the introduction. Just the introduction. To Rabbi Kalbach's collection. Akdamot Milim, so this is the next page, on my page 37. Ma shehebiyani logeshet al hamalacha hazod, what caused me to take on this work, shehi be'emet malacha v'lo chachma, that is, I just work and not chachma, I'm afraid I agree with him. Haya vikuach was a debate, shehaya li im isha gedola v'chashuva, yodat sefer umadadeket umitzvot umasim tovim, a woman who, an important, well-known woman, who is well-educated and a careful observer, observant of the mitzvot, ach hi overat al dach yehidit rosha parua ki achat abtulot. But she goes around with her hair uncovered. So this is now in Lubeck, I guess at the beginning of this century, the 20th century.
There's a definite difference between the skula and the American woman.
Yeah.
There's no question that it was going to be.
Sure. When I reprimanded her on this, she answered me, I don't have the right to reprimand her on this matter. והושיטי יד לנשים ולבטולות הבאות אל ביתי או הולכות לקראתי בשוק. That I, after all, shake the hands of married or single women who come to greet me in my house or in the street. שהצנועים ובפרט הרבנים המדקקים ביעשות המזרח נזרים לבלתי נגועה ביד אישה כבר. After all, a real religious rabbi, not you, a German rabbi here in Lübeck, have the custom of not shaking the hand of a woman at all. So therefore, what right do you have? Tell me something about covering or not covering my hair. And what's the difference between your shaking the hand of a woman and my wearing and not covering my hair? The whole issue is dependent upon custom, what the normal practice is. So she's resurrecting the argument of the Mara Malashka. והמדקדקים באשכנז אין מפקפידים בהושטת יד, אבל נזהרים שלא תלכנה לשוטיהם בראש ובשאר ארצות בהפך. In the other countries, like Russia, for example, the women, married women, go around with their hair uncovered, but the rabbis don't shake their hands. לשב הרבה דברים נגד, כי אין שני דברים האלה עולים בקנה אחד. I was unable to convince her. And my argument being ki hashatat yad l'isha eina asur elu mishum hiru v'rak im nitkaven hanagei lahana'at iha isur, that is dependent upon intent, v'yak shigam ani v'yatzmi mizharti mikad matana, even though I myself was machmir not to shake a woman's hand earlier on, lo haya la'el yadi la'amol b'derach ha'pushim mishum lo kuk ki hashi k'tzat nashim yodot m'isur ze v'yeinu mashitat yidehem l'ish the Khan of the Satan, Ruban lo yaru v'lo shamu sheyesh mino mezeh v'notnat yad l'fi tuman v'ein lecha biyush gadol yoter mizeh ma lesarev l'hakot kach el kach derech kavod k'minhag v'yatzeinu v'gadol kavod ha'briyot shegol kach etzer. Since most women are unaware that there's any such prohibition, and it's an insult if someone puts out his or her hand not to shake the hand, therefore since kavod ha'briyot is dolche even the possibility of there being any issue. He's repeating, continuing his conversation with this woman. Ha'isur shelo telech isha kruat rosh. Din mufurashu b'shasu l'hoskim. Oz, but it is a clear-cut law. Oz shala isha ina'al mimeni v'arokla et adin hazeh v'er heitev v'chtar emet v'sifrei ha'hoskim asher mitiyem anu chayim she'isur deraito afilu rak midorabanan hu l'isha l'lechet kruat rosh. Rak bazal mazihim matshav mitam שובר דעת יהודית, לא שם זה לפי דעתו הוא כמו מנהג יהודים, ובזמננו היום נתבטל מנהג זה ולא הביא עוד פריצות דעתה אורך רוב הנשים ללכת כפוי ראש. על כן חפשתי את ספר ספר, so therefore you gathered all of this scholarly material, so I'm sure it was a failed attempt to convince this woman that there was a difference.
A mythical woman.
Right. Whatever. Then a short summary of this in German, which I will leave for you who are German members to enjoy. The next item, which I won't read, is a long article by Rabbi Weinberg on the etymology of the word parah, or show what the word parua or parah is. You might have some interest in it.
I always thought it meant brave.
Unbraided.
To go unbraided. And, right. And that's why I always thought, perhaps during the Tommy Katara, the women always have their hair braided. And if their hair was loose, then they weren't allowed to
wear it. Well, read what Rabbi Weinberg has to say on the subject. He goes into a detailed etymological discussion my mind, the whole issue is irrelevant, because what we're dealing with here is what actual local custom was and how things were interpreted. So, but if you prefer an etymological discussion of the subject, and he quotes many of the non-Jewish scholars on this night, the biblical scholars. I put it in there.
Rashi follows here. Would you follow Rashi?
Wear braids, and married women keep their hair covered completely. Right. Okay, now let's spend the rest of the evening.
How do you call it? Okay.
No, they don't wear a shape of custom shawl. To make sure it's doubly short. Okay. Let's read now four or five of these Tshuvot of Rav Moshe. All of them are interesting. We don't have time to read all of them. So we'll start on page 54. My 54. בדבר מחיצה בין אנשים לאנשים בבית הכנסת ובעניין הבימה חופי תמוז תפשין פתוח 56 Now, this is what Moshe found הנה בדבר המחיצה שבין אנשים לאנשים ודאי מן הראוי כשאפשר טוב לעשות גבוה שלא יתראו אנשים כבר It's best to have it so high that the women not be visible. ובפרט במדינה זו שהרבה נשים הולכות כלולי ראש וגם בזרועות מגולות. And because many women go with their hair uncovered and even with their arms, גם כשהולכות לבית הכנסת. ובראותינו הרבים אין כוח למחות לבית. We do not have the power to prevent women to change their mode of dress. אבל כשאי אפשר, when it's impossible to build a מחיצה that high, כבר ביארתי בתשובה שנתפסה זה שנים, הרבה שנים, שצריכה להיות גבוה עד אחר הכתפיים, שהיא לבינונית ערך חף יד טווחים, 18 טווחים, שזהו השיעור מדין המחיצה. וגם אם יהיה בזרועות מגולות, לא יתראו. So therefore, even if women are going around with bare arms, they won't be visible. ודבר השיער, and the matter of the uncovered hair, כיוון שהושת הדחק, שאין מניחים ביופן אחר, Since we can't prevail, יש לסמוך על מקילים, הרפא הרמב״ם שאין השיער ערבה לינקיות שמה בדברי תורה. That there is no prohibition against saying מקריאת שמה in the presence of uncovered hair. ובזמננו, שבעוונותינו הרבים, רוב הנשים הולכות כלולות ראש. Now, unfortunately, in our times in New York, since most women go with their hair uncovered, actually be isul, even though it's prohibited. Katav ve'aruch ha'shulchan simenayim he, she'ach la'osvim nami yesh la'ket. One must be naked. Me'acharash ve'al kol panim ha'ein da'kan l'chasot. This is something that is not normally covered. Ve'erva li'isur p'yat shmav, ve'vrei tarah talui b'da'kan l'chasato mamash. Ve'lo sha'ais isur o'machshir l'makom o'chusah. You don't have the prohibition of keeping the hair uncovered converted into an erotic object. ולעניה דעתי נראה ראיה גדולה, מזה, מיוחד את חוצרה כבר ששת הברכות, להוכיח בשר ואישה ערבה מקרד בשערך כעדר העיזים, שהוקרא בדברי קבלה, he had to bring a פסוק משיר השירים, ורק מספרה מאלמה, שהוא זה משבח לקרוא בגבר כדב הרש רשי, and it's only an inference after all, because במאי לא הביא הקרד ופרה ראש האישה, שהובינו מזה ואסור ללך לגילוי ראש. ומצד זה הוא מקום מחוסר שעושה אחלה שיער בנערבה, אלא ודאי שהאיסור ללך מגולה לא היה עושה את השיער בנערבה, ולקח הוא צריך להביא כבר ונשאר אחלה בגבה שמזה שמה מנתה והיא כדפי השרש. ואם כן, מאחר שעת ונשאר אחלה בגבה לא נאסר לקרוא את פי השמה כנגד שר פניות, שדרכן ללך ולא לקרוא את ראש, Alma the Tamza in all of Circusha dot com left law. Lachain Kevansha Ata, Hogulu Alech, Afanasuot, Kuol. Now even married women go with their hair uncovered. Afshahu be Isur, Eno Erval, Gabi Kuyach, Mandiway Torah, Lachain Beshatat Tak, Leish Lismokaze. יורי השם יש להם להחמיר לפות פניהם לצד אחר, כשאומרים קריאת שמה, וכל סדר תפילות, כי ישר יסלוי עיניהם, בכיוון של עצמם יכולים להחמיר, אין זה שעת הדחק בפניהם. So, first of all, you don't have to have a ceiling high מחיצה like he has in his own shoulder, it's enough to have it shoulder high, and don't worry about the fact that there's going to be women in the Ezra Slashim who keep their hair uncovered. מה שרוצים לצרף יוריה מעשי רשת, אם נראות בזה זרועות המגולות אינו קומר, אם היו יוריה כזו שנראות באופן שאין להכר המקומות שהן מגולות, נחשב כיסוי כיוון שלא אומר גלו הבשר, רק נראה כצל בעלמה. If it's translucent but not transparent, then there's no prohibition. וכשאנשים על... The gauze, but sufficiently thick that you cannot...
You can just see shadows.
You can only see light and dark, but you won't actually be able to see the women's names. I don't remember. I don't think it went up to the ceiling like it went up to the ceiling. But I just don't remember. If you ask me the inches, I won't be able to
tell you. Thank you.
No. כשאנשים הם על הבלקני, יוצאים לזה מדי מחיצה, אף שהמחיצה נמוכה, מאחר שאין מגובה. Since they're elevated in the balcony above the ground floor, then you don't have to worry about the height of the מחיצה as long as far as the law of מחיצה is concerned. אבל מאחר שהולכות בזרועות מגולות, צריך להוסיף יריעת שלא יתנו זרועותיהן. ואם אפשר להוסיף עד שלא יהיו גם הצייר שלהם אבל, ובתי כנסיות שיש להם בלקני אין מקפידים שוב ואין יודע טעם, ובוודאי הוא משום שאין יכולים לעשות כלום שלא ישמעו להם. Very bad. Okay, next let's go to the next תשובה, which is basically a repetition of this one. ועניין מחיצה בבית הכנסת בין העזרה שלשים שרצו חלק של מעלה מזכוכית. ועכשיו יותר דילי רב
הבית.
He mentions the one way. בדבר המחיצה שנעשה חלק ממנה מזכוכית בערב שליש מלמעלה הנה יפה כתב כתוב התאו שמדין המחיצה לקח חיסרון
They can prevent it.
We can prevent anything as long as it just prevents the mixing of the groups. אבל ניצל אחר שאולי ילכו בלבושי פריצות שנראה בשרן כמו שאינו יול ללכת על עונותי הערבים חרבי נשים בנינו חלק ואם כן יהיה אסור לפלל כשבניהם לצד עזרת נשים לפלל ולמד דברי תורה אם לא ש... תראו להזהיר שהיא מלובשת עצמיות כשבאות לבית הכנסת וגם לידע שיקיימו האזהרה. ורק בשערות המגולות... ורק בשערות המגולות...
When
you're facing them, that's the problem. You see them. דרך בסערות המגולות, only on a matter of uncovered hair, שנפרצו רוב הנשים בבנותיהן הרבים, אין לאסור כשלקרות קריאת שמע כנגדם, מטעם של הרב הרמב"ם לא נאמר זה לעניין קריאת שמע, ואף למחבר ובימי שאוספים נמי, כתב באורך השולחן שכיוון שנפרצו בזה הרבה נשים, אף שהוא בניסור, אין שוב בדין ערבה לקריאת שמע בדברי תורה, ויש להניח בעתיר ראיה גדולה לדבריו, etc. אני repeat this argument. So that he's willing to concede that nowadays, since most women go with their hair uncovered, there's no prohibition to say Kriyat Shema to daven in the presence.
And he likes the one-sided glass.
Right. And he mentions the one-sided glass at the end. Okay.
I suppose that all the women would have their heads covered and be dressed very modestly. Then would he say the mafitsa could be very low, or you wouldn't?
And then he says that it has to be shoulder high. Okay, now let's go to his 57. Nish'alti, here's an interesting joke. Nish'alti b'dvar isha shenit almana. A woman became widowed. U'tzricha l'farnes b'neha. and she has to work to support her children. ואינה מוצאה להסתכל למשרה שיהיה כדי לפרנס את בניה, אלא ואם לא תחסר את ראשה. כשתהיה באופיס, לעבוד במשרתה עם הרשאה. זה עוד משהו again. והשבתי שיש להתיר לה בצורת גדול כזה. She should be allowed to do so in, under such circumstances. זה פשוט שאף להבית שמואל ודוד ומרבבה, שסבלים ירושלמי שגם אלמנה אסורה ללכת ראשו רק מצד דת יהודית שמדיוריתא היא רק באשת איש נאמר ולכן, כיוון שיש לפרש את המאחר שלו נאמר בתורה בלשון ניסור הוא רק חיוב עשה שתלך בכיסוי הראש ומסתבר לה אני ידעתי שבזה פליגי שני הלשונות בראשי בפייר שאלתות הראשון כמה שווה שתמתים לא הכים לנאב לא מידה כנגד מינה כמו שסבלנו בכלל בסור סבר שהוא איסור בעין ברפא, אצטר, אצטר ולכן ודאי הוא איסור לשתבט ראש ראש ונחיל ופועל מכלל דהישה את הלך הוא אהב השמע מנה אין דרך בנות ישראל לצאת כבוד ראש מה שלו הוא עניין מצווה עליה ללכת את ישראל ראש that she is commanded to cover her hair ולא עניין איסור רק שממיר לנעשה איסור והעוברת על העשה כשהולכת כבוד ראש an interesting reinterpretation that this is a positive commandment on the married on the woman to cover her hair ומה סקרה שישקי ניקור והחילוק לדינו And what's the difference between whether this is an Yisur Lav or an Overing on an Aseh? Ba'achiluk ladinu hu d'im hu Yisur, if there's an Yisur Lav, yesh le'esor af behefseid gadol, kishetapsid kol mamunah. Aval im hu rak kiyuv Aseh, if this is only a positive obligation, gam ones v'mon b'yotem nichonesh, ones v'aseh chayav la'arak ad chonesh. You're only obligated to form a positive mitzvah up to a loss of a fifth of your wealth. ולכן, כל שהוא הפסד כחומש נחסה ביותר, כהו שאינו משגת משרה להביא אחרך יותה וחיות בניה, הוא אונס שאין מחויבת ולשנה בקו שהוא איתה. Therefore he maintains that since this was only a custom, and therefore only a positive commandment on this woman, the poor widow, who can only get a job if she works in an office with her hair uncovered, is allowed to do so. אך מכל מקום באשת איש יהודיוריתו יש לאסור מספק. פרש יש לכמה דבר שיש לזה איסור שלכן יש לאסור אף להפסד כוונה, אבל באלמנה שהוא רק דת יהודית, יש להקל מספק, בוודאי לא חמור מאיסור דרבנן שהספק בכולה. ויש גם לומר, and here's an even further interesting interpretation, שאולי דת יהודית היא רק מדיני מנהג שאין לאסור באופן שלא מצינו שנהגו. If a makom has said in a situation where there is a huge monetary loss, halom utzino shenahagul, so that may not even be any positive commandment. So he allows this one.
He leaves the door open also for the married woman.
He leaves the door slightly ajar for the married woman. One is whether it's an isotor, an isodiorita, or whether this is a prohibition that arose out of a custom. Now, someone took his heter one step further, and he gave his consent. Let's turn to the next page, the paragraph I have marked. Im yesh lahatir l'drusha leilech b'gilui rosh k'dei shelo yedu shehayta nesua. Can a divorcee go with her hair uncovered so that she could not let it be known, visible at first sight, that she had already been married? V'hadin nestafei kol torato b'isha tse'ira drusha. A young divorced woman. She'ena rotzona she'yedu she'hayta nesua. She doesn't want people to know that she had been married. She'lachen rotzona lelechet b'lik kisui rosh. V'af she'ena rotzona l'ramot. It's not that she wants to deceive anybody. V'gam i'efshar l'ramot. It's not possible for her to conceal completely the fact that she's been divorced. She'arei yodin mizeh kol makireha. All of her acquaintances know that she is divorced. Umi she yirtza lisa ota, bada yish'al aleha, v'yomar lo shehi grusha. A person who's going to want to marry her will investigate. Uva medinatenu, in New York, v'achrech yedah v'eit v'shimatan b'city hall. Shehar yolakzar ba'alfa. Certainly when they go to get the license from city hall, it will turn out that they didn't know that she was married. However, what is her intent? Aval kavanata. ואחר שיכירו אותה ותמצא חן בעיני אחד ונוסע, when she is attractive to a possible suitor, לא תאבד חינה כשתספר לו אחר כך שהיה לבעל ונתגרשה. אבל כשידעו מתחילה שהיא גרושה, לא ירצו לחשוב על דלתי הכלל. They won't want to give her any consideration. והוא דבר מובן שיש לחוש לזה. It's quite understandable that the woman is concerned about this. אם יש לה עתירה כמו שהתארתי בתשובה בארזי נצח אמלה בלאמנה, שהייתה צריכה להסתכל בעצמה לפני הספניה, ולא רצו להתאם למשרה כזו, אלא דווקא ולא תחסר חושה. ודאי צדק כתוב הורתו שיש לה עתיר גם למי שרוצו, allow this divorcee to go with a hair and cover, שהוא הפסד גדול לעניין השגת אחד לנוסף. Because it would be a great loss that she should not have the ability to attract someone at first sight. כמו שהתארתי שם, בגרושה שצריך לחסות ראשה אינו גם כן מדירייתא, אלא מצד דת יהודית, אבל צריכה לידע שבמקום שאין לה לחוש, צריכה לחסות ראשה ולא תהיה מותרת לגמרי בשביל זה. I'm not giving a blanket heter, but basically it's okay. So it's a very compassionate shuva, again, in the typical reverse style of...
Where is the discussion about what kind of difference there is between exposing your own hair or wearing somebody else's hair?
Well, that we discussed last week. There was a long discussion about that.
She just didn't know whether or not
let's read just the beginning of the next long tshuva.